You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm 2025's Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. Happy New Year, as Justin was intimating at the beginning there. This is
so
the
intimate.
First new, it's very intimate. First big show of the new year. Very excited.
We're
to
alive.
Be back after a break for now. Don't make any promises by the end of the show or anything. We don't know what's going to happen. But because this is our first show of the month, as we usually do here, we pay a little tribute to the folks who support us on Patreon at the $5 and up level by reading off their names. We do.
High five.
Yeah. The high five. That's the level. That's what we call it. So why don't we start it off by giving a big thank you to Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Bradley Hansen.
Carrie Matthews.
Chad Brickett.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terra Lizzie.
Clemens Luere.
Corey Smoker.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
David Donaldson.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek the Main Heart.
Doug Sadoway.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Enrique Chooms.
Gerard Devilliers.
Ian Rainey.
Oh, busted.
Ian Thomas.
Alex is busted. Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Cottley.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Joey Groa.
And that's one to grow up, I would say. John Henderson.
Wow. Really took a
Jonathan John. Please take the material.
Mick too cool for Mick school.
If this is wrong, I don't want to be Josh Wright.
Joshua Loyal.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wiggler.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lance Kaminsky.
Luana Thomas.
Lucas Sink.
Matthijs.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Matthew Schofield.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nathan Hall.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Mackers.
Stray Bullies. Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Oitis Larson.
Pedro A. Wrangle.
My Favorite Way to Travel by Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
I'm out.
Robert Pettinato.
Rod Hood.
Roxanne Tyler. Shouts to my mom. There she is.
Sarah Schottmuller. Shouts to my mom.
Yeah. Sarah Schaefer. Weird if it's not true.
Not true. Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Scotty Dew.
Severin.
Stanley.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Trill Root.
Troy Moulineau.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Will Diaz.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And Zika's Viral Comics.
Thank you all so much for your support of our Patreon. If you would like to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can support at starting at $2 and up. You get access to our Patreon Slack, where we're chatting all day. Our back catalog of podcasts going all the way back to 2011. That's thousands of podcasts, many of which are not online any longer. And if you do want to pledge for a year, you get 2 months free. So that's a pretty good deal.
Do you get to choose the months?
yes.
Ooh. I like on a free August. August feels like a real, yeah. like,
it's kind of like a non-month. It's like a non-month,
exactly.
honestly.
Just like January and December.
Yes.
Whoa.
So listen, later in the show, actually, before I get to the guests, one last quick little plug that I'll mention here. This weekend, we are going to be in New Orleans at Fan Woo! Expo New Orleans. No love. And we're going to be doing two shows there. One is going to be at a local brewery called Brew Carré. That's going to be Friday, January 10th at 8 p.m. And we're going to have guest Gavin Guidry, you might know from Predator versus Wolverine, as well as Superman 78, The Metal Curtain. And our old booth man, Anthony Marquez, Woo-hoo! Who is running something called the Qbert School now. But I assume his like main claim to fame is he used to run our tech for us back in the
day. Yeah, they moved his booth down to New Orleans, so he's down there now. So,
he also has his own comic book shop and does amazing art.
All right. Come on, stop. You can plus him up in person. So that's going to be at Brew Carré, and that's a free show, though food and drinks are available on site, including from Shift, the restaurant run by our amazing Brett Macris, our own CBC chef.
Straight
and then
bullies.
On Saturday, January 11th at 4 p.m., we're going to be doing a taping at Fan Expo with guest Mark Guggenheim is going
the
to
Goog?
Be on. The Googs. Wow. You might know from the Arrowverse and many, many other things.
Rumor has it he's going to punch Pete in the face for coining the term the Googs.
Yeah. You'll just have to turn up and find out. But that's enough business out of the way. Let's get to the party here, which is our guest. Later in the show, we're going to bring in Charles Soule and Ryan Brown to talk about the Lucky Devils. But let's kick it off by bringing in Jeff Parker. Jeff,
Hey, welcome.
And Jeff is the writer, among other things, of the new Zootopia comic from Dynamite, which comes out tomorrow. Art is by Alessandro Rinaldi. We've read the book. It's super fun.
Yeah.
I think, not to speak for you guys, but I think it does a great job of really channeling the movie, which is awesome. And I think that's kind I assume, what you want to go for in this sort of thing. How'd you get hooked up with this, given this is, I believe, the first Zootopia comic book?
I feel like I willed it into existence. Just by liking the movie so much. That's the way it works. I don't know if up-and-comers get that, but all you got to do is sit there and like something enough, and it'll happen, just like Willy Wonka says.
All right.
Do you mean just sit there and, like, think happy thoughts? Or like?
No, you got to hit the like
press
button.
Like on Facebook. Yeah.
I just think about that whole nudist camp scene where the animals are running around without clothes on. That's really the only part I've ever watched.
And, I don't remember that part.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Just the nudist camp part, and then you somehow spun it in. That's amazing that the comic works so well based on that. That's crazy. Yeah.
It all builds off that.
It shows in the work.
I should have probably included the fox and the bunny in there, but maybe next time.
Yeah. You definitely got their names wrong in the comic, which I wasn't going to mention, but now that you brought it up. No. It obviously like picks up right at the end of the movie. The other part of it though is there has been only one movie of Zootopia. It's not like there's a long backstory, a bunch of Disney lore that's been built up or anything like that. So, what kind of free reign, if any, were you given with something like this?
Oh, you know, they're not going to let me just start creating things. Now here's the new mayor of Zootopia or anything like that.
A human, finally. There's a human in Zootopia.
Yeah, a human shows up, and they eat him.
Perfect.
No, they, and of course they're not going to let me see the movie, which is fine, because I want to see it cold like everybody else.
You haven't seen the sequel. You haven't seen Zootopia 2.
Oh, no.
The sequel,
I'm sure
the first one's out.
Right.
Yeah, it's been out for 9 years. Yeah. It doesn't seem that long ago, but it was, and... I'm really glad they circled back around to it. It's kind of weird. I guess now they do that, you know, like 20 years ago, and then they'll come back like, let's make another one of the exact same movie.
Well, I do feel like this movie looms large, at least with my kids. We watched this on the reg. It's a movie that I think has sort of grown in esteem over the years.
Yeah. My son was the one who got me into it. I was at a free comic book day signing with artist Sandy Jarrell. We went back to where both of us went to college in Greenville, North Carolina. And So our sons, the Super Sons, went next door to the theater that was there. And what was showing was Zootopia. So they went to see that. And my son came out of there raving about it. And he was like, you got to go see it. And I'm like, well, we don't have time on this trip to watch another movie. Like, you know,
is there a nudist camp scene? You said. Yeah.
So we waited till the next showing. But when we got back to Portland, because I was like, okay, he doesn't like junk. I'll just buy it digitally. And then we just watched it over and over. Always on every time I came through the living room. And then I'd plop down and just watch it again. I was like, I can't believe how this thing's like a watch, you know, it's just so well made.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the most interesting Disney movie in like 20 some years, at least. Who hasn't seen it? Is it Pete who hasn't seen it?
Correct. I don't have kids. Yes.
You can watch it. Your eyes.
I don't know if you know the good news about animation. You can watch it as an adult.
Yeah, man. I love cartoons.
You can watch. You can play with action figures.
Don't give him that permission. We'll never see him again.
Yeah. No, it's weirdly the most adult of the Disney cartoons or 3D cartoons.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like this movie is like has some really big ideas in it and some sort of mature-ish themes or bigger philosophies.
Exactly. Listen to Justin. He's telling you what's going on here.
I love the comic so much, I'm going to go see the movie.
Yeah. Well, even in the comic, I'm not touching on some of the stuff they touched on in the movie because it's like they could have gotten in trouble for some of it because you can tell what am I off base here in saying that like they're hinting at heavier stuff in real life a lot of the mm-hmm. time.
Big time, like big like society yeah. construction ideas
yeah. yeah.
that are like when I first watched this movie, I was like, man, this is really making me think. It's yeah, like, wow.
I didn't think they'd go there. And then they yeah. did. I mean, there's no swearing or anything. I already said there's naked animals, but that's also part of what I think the movie is. It's the old joke cartoonists used to make of what if Disney animals met real animals in the real world. And that's kind of what happens in Zootopia several times. Suddenly there's a feral creature coming at them that they normally would have just talked to.
It's sort of the Pluto Goofy spectrum yeah. brought to life.
And I don't want to get into the whole thing, is Goofy a man or any of that discussion or whatever.
Good, me either.
So I wrote my senior thesis on that, so I've covered it. But yeah.
What a great! I wish I had been one of the reviewers of your thesis. That would be great. But the main thing I thought to get with this is, and really the heavy lifting, a lot of it goes to Alessandro Rinaldi
because yeah, that's amazing.
He has to do the work of what hundreds of animators did in concept. But and get it all across on a page. But like this panel you're putting up, where they do the little inset right there.
Yeah, I love that. Each other.
It's such clever stuff. It's like you have to work with what you got. You know, we've got frozen moments. We don't have real time. We can't have a scene play out like that. So we have to hit with very specific choices to make the reader feel it in their head. His BOGO is perfect. Look at that.
Well, so one thing that I was going to say that I really appreciated about at least the first issue, and I assume this is going to play out over the other ones, is that you have an overarching mystery going on with Nick Wilde and Judy Hopps, the Bunny and the Fox, for those who don't know, Pete, about what's going on there. But it also seems like you're doing a procedural structure at the same time. What led to that decision?
Nate Cosby, the editor, talked about it as a procedural, and I was like, well, yeah, but they've got to also solve a big deeper mystery because that's who they are. Whereas other cops would just like do the very bottom of what they were required, you know, these two are a little smarter and more onto it, and they're gonna find something going on. So to have RK Can Eat It Too, I planned it so that you can read each one as if they're just on their daily mission that they're assigned by BOGO in the ready room. But once you read them all together, you realize they're kind of on the same thing the entire time. Yeah, that's like, I always have to catch myself here. Like, let me spoil it for you. This, you're going to love this.
We actually have a question from the comments over here. Would love to know, it's right here, I'm going to pull this down so we can see your face. Would love to know what some of the rules were from the parent company. Like, what subject matter do you have to avoid?
They didn't say, because they seem to be in the mode of, let's see if he screws up first and then tell him.
Right.
You know, like, they didn't. And I understand why. You don't want to come out and say, they specifically said, don't have them do this. But then they would have told me as if I had crossed a line. And I was surprised how fast they got back and approved our main story. That is not always the case.
Yeah.
Which made me think, okay, I'm not accidentally crossing into anything they're doing in the movie, because they would have squashed that right away. And I'm not doing anything wrong with the tone, which is important. The tone is everything in this. And they seem cool with that. They occasionally gave me some notes that were head scratchers. You know, and it's like, it was easy stuff to address, but it's like, I've watched the movie literally 100 times or something. Like, I really know the characters, I feel, as much as I didn't watch whatever the Disney Plus extra show that they did, because that seemed like one of those things where I bet they're going to say none of that counts, so I'm not even going to look at it and accidentally get influenced.
Well, one thing, and I don't know if this is in your purview or you're part of the project at all, that I was curious about, it's called different things in different countries. Like, I think in Europe it's called Zootropolis instead of Zootopia. Is that something that you had to think about at all? Were there different cultural differences?
I was kind of fascinated by that, because Zootropolis makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then again, Zootopia works with the theme, because, you know, when Judy shows up as the little simple farm girl who's going to the big city to make it and everything, she is thinking of it as a utopia. And Nick Wilde, the fox, is, who's the street grifter, is happy to tell her that it's like, yep, everybody comes here thinking that, and it's not, and you're all wrong, and blah, 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 and rain on her parade. So I think Zootopia probably does work, but it kind of, I don't know, you can kind of stick zoo on a lot of stuff and still it works.
That's true.
Zootopia hits on the themes in a nice way, I feel like.
Yeah.
We've read a lot of the comics coming out of Disney, and I feel like they do take more creative swings than I think we ever thought.
Yeah, they upped their game for sure.
So, but I guess that tracks with, like, they are maybe just excited about comics. They approved your storyline so quickly. What do you chalk that up to?
Yeah, well, I think Nate is asking a lot of good creators.
Yeah.
Me, clearly, but you know, it's, but no, he goes for people that, like, he threw two things in front of me saying, like, which of these, and I'm not going to say what the other property was, and he's like, what do you have a feeling about either of these two? And I went, Zootopia. You know, like, that was the same thing. He did the same thing to me years ago with a list that had Flash Gordon on it, and I went, Flash Gordon. And that was what Doc Shaner and I ended up working on, like, my first stuff at Dynamite.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I've got Flash Gordon opinions. And I was like, I've got Zootopia opinions. But and it's hard. Like, if I had no feeling for the material, though, I would take myself out of the running right away. I've done it plenty of times. It's you're not doing a service to the readers if you're just trying to, like, because you could just pro-muscle your way through it, you know, and it's like, okay, I'll write a blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you really should be into it, I think, as much as possible. I totally avoided your question, but you know, it seems like Disney's like, I can't really speak for them at all, but it feels like they're sprinkling around their properties to everybody because they've got so many. And kind of seeing who does what we like, you know, with this. And I think it's pretty cool. Dynamite's done a pretty strong showing out the gate on a lot of the stuff. You know, you would think Marvel has the inside lane, being the direct owned thing by them. Or is it the other way? Does Marvel own Disney? I forget.
It's a nobody knows. It's a co-parenting type situation.
Definitely not. Sorry to break your hearts, but that's definitely not the case.
That's how Disney owns
everything. That's how corporations work.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, we do have a in and out, whatever they feel like.
We do have a question, another question over here, this time from Facebook, from Ken Gordon. Says, if you could choose another Disney project to write, what else would you do?
Of the things I know that they are now dealing with, and that's all I'm going to talk about, I think, Lilo and Stitch, because I like that one a lot, too. I like Stitch. I think he's just a great design. I like Chris Sanders and all of his stuff, even though I haven't seen the robot cartoon. Yeah, so I'm behind, but I'm just saving it. And so anyway, I just really like the look. That was one where they went for some kind of classic approaches that wasn't being done at all. So I appreciate that. Let's see what other, I don't know. Throw up some Disney things. Let's try to
Rescuers Down Under.
Wow, deep.
Oh,
cut.
Wow. I like that you didn't go for the Rescuers, but you went for the Rescuers Down Under.
You gotta skip ahead. You gotta skip.
Is that a better movie?
I don't know. I don't remember anything about that.
No.
I feel like they treated Australia like a made-up place in that movie.
What sticks in my head from watching it at the time it came out, that was where they first started embracing, using the computer graphics to wrap things and then, you know, model something, and you could really tell it. Like it
yes.
really stuck out. Like, here comes a computer thing at you. And here's a computer mock-up of that giant rock that you have to show every time you're doing something in Australia. And that's just to annoy the Australian fans right there. They're like, that has a name.
We have more stuff.
Yeah. Ooh. But I don't know. I like the original Rescuers.
Yeah. Nice. I did want to ask you about another project that you just finished up, which was Silent Night Returns.
Yes. Oh, good.
The sequel to the mashup between Batman and Santa Claus, or really Santa Claus and the entire DC universe.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Is this going to be a yearly event now?
Yeah. Are you trying to own Christmas, Jeff?
I feel what's up, Mariah Carey? Even though I always thought of myself as more a Halloween guy, I feel like, why don't I just take over Christmas? No one's doing anything with it.
yeah. It's one of those things that people just shrug their shoulders at.
Yeah, every year they ignore it. And I thought, why don't we just lean into it? That was one where the editors came. Ben Abernathy was the bad editor at the time. And he and editor-in-chief Marie Javens had been talking about what could we do that would be a cool Christmas thing. And I think he just started drinking and getting wild with the whole idea of a battling Santa, and gave me literally about that much information, and I was like, I can do it. Let's go make him essentially a Norse god.
And it was your idea to make him hot and jacked as well.
Yeah, I thought, well, it was funny how well the artist jumped on that. You know,
agreed.
I mean, well, no, first Dan Mora comes in and does designs, because he's only drawing two comics a month. You know, he might as well spend a little extra time designing some stuff for us and doing our covers. And so suddenly he gives us a hot Santa, and everybody reacted much more than I thought they were going to that. So, like, if you saw the variant covers this year, they went even further, I think.
Noted.
Yeah, it's like Santa's running around with his shirt off. He's doing all kinds of Santa-licious.
Hey man,
stuff.
it's and, sweater weather over at DC Comics. So
yeah,
wow, look at that.
Yes, but I just want to say, for anybody who hasn't read it, so it is this mashup between Santa Claus and the DC Universe. Silent Night Returns was the sequel. One of the things that I love about it is they released both series weekly, so it really does feel like this delightful holiday present that rolls out.
That's my favorite part. I love the fact that, like, I did. When you write it weekly, you don't have to worry about recapping for everybody. Like, all this stuff happened a month ago. You can just roll right into the next story. You kind of know how it's going to read in the trade then. And, no one's giving you crap about it. Like, I don't remember any of this. You know, They just read it, or they just got two at a time, and it's a little more like doing theater. You know, you're suddenly getting really quick reactions to things. Yeah. It's kind of a nightmare for scheduling, especially at the time of year it falls on, because all the like companies like Marvel and DC, they try to cut off everything by the last week of November to get things printed and shipped.
Right.
And because the printers give them a hard deadline, they're saying like, we're not going to be around, we're all leaving. So you have to get your stuff in even earlier. So we were booking it, but luckily we had Lucas Kettner as the main artist, and Lucas just knocked it out of the park, man. He just did such good stuff, and he was fast. And I was like, wow, I had no idea you were going to be just burning it up like this. This is amazing. Our main characters in that are always, well, everybody laughs. It's like, where's Batman? His name's right on the front of it. It's like, but really, like, Damian and Zatanna are the other main characters that you get a lot. But we got in a lot of cool stuff I like Etrigan and Metamorpho and, Cliff Steele and Mary Marvel. I was just like, because you never know. You think they may never do this again. They're going to come to their senses. I'm just going to jam all my favorite characters into this story.
You could tell that it felt like such a fun mix of characters that I don't want to say they're all underserved, but a lot of them I was like, yes, good. Great to see them back.
Well, like the holidays. Everybody going, everybody's like, wow, this one really embraces the all in thing. And I was like, oh yeah, what's all in? I was like,
yeah. I live all in.
The story, I had no idea they were doing that. And I turned it in, and they said, oh, cool. I'm glad you're doing the thing of bringing in the other characters of the Justice League. I went, I just thought we already did that. I didn't know it was something that was new. I just assumed everybody gets tapped by the Justice League if Batman feels.
Isn't that how comics work, where all the characters are friends?
The way the Avengers are. I figured it was the way the Justice League was, you know? Well, also, I did a little run on Justice League Unlimited, and that was kind of the thing that we were doing there. So I think cool. I was just back in that mode again, like, oh, good, I can bring in whoever I want. Mera from Aquaman, you know.
Nice. Well, it definitely works. We are going to have to wrap up, but is
oh,
there...
I suppose Charles and Ryan want to say something.
but is there, before we let you go, is there anything else you would like to plug?
Yeah, but it's too early because you can't get ahead of whatever the companies want. So... I will just say, please pick up Zootopia this week, if you don't mind.
It's great-ish.
Hand it to somebody. It's the kind of comic you can hand to a normie, and they will get it. Because except for Pete, they saw the movie, and they will absolutely just, they'll be into it. So, you know, you got to have some entry points like that, I feel.
Yes.
Yeah. But, Jeff. It's a great book. I do hope, fingers crossed, we get another Silent Night next year, or Silent Night Strikes Back, maybe, just to, you know, spitball some titles or something.
Do I have to cut you in if I use your ideas? No.
Yes, that's how companies work. That's, okay. I know how companies work. I get
all right. Well, if
really gets it.
If you say, thank you so much for having me in the club. I appreciate it.
Come back anytime.
Yeah, great seeing you.
Have a great night.
All right.
All right. Ooh, I cut him off. There we go. I'm the worst at that. Like you said, Zootopia number one is out tomorrow from Dynamite. It's great. Definitely pick it up.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And let's bring in two more guys who have a comic that is coming out tomorrow. It's called The Lucky Devils. And two of our favorite guys to chat with, Charles Soule and Ryan Brown. Hello.
What's up?
What just happened there?
How are you? Hey, there he is.
Is that the move Ryan did? I think it was the move Ryan did. We both go like this.
That's what you're known for.
Awesome.
Only way to do it. Hey.
Guys, welcome. So excited to talk about this book. So this is The Lucky Devils coming out from Image Comics tomorrow. It's a 9-issue series. It is not exactly a sequel in any way to 8 Billion Genies, but it's sort of a spiritual sequel in a certain way, the way that we've talked about it before, where it's weird little guys doing magical things. Is that
that's how you describe it, right?
Yeah.
That's the pitch.
Yep.
The pitch from the start, we called up Image Comics and said, hey guys, we got a book for you. Weird little guys doing magical things.
Sold. They they're like, that's what we call you two. That's your name.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Nice.
I'd like to refer to it as our Little Dudes Messing with Humanity trilogy. I don't know what the third
trilogy. Yeah, I like, you're really calling your shot.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
The book is great, though, and to mildly get into the plot, and then I'll let you guys take it from there, because I don't know how much you want to talk about up front before it's out there, but we're following two regular people who have sort of the devil on their shoulder, who want to amp things up a bit. They want to push them to the next level for, of course, nefarious for devil reasons that become clear over the course of the first couple of issues. What else do people know to be prepped for this book?
Well, so the book is built around the concept, the age old concept from, you know, millennia, let's say millennia, of shoulder devils, right? The devil that sits on your shoulder, whispering in your ear, telling you to do evil, tempting you to do bad things when you know what the good thing is. And that's a very universal idea. The idea that we know the good thing, we do the bad thing anyway. People do it all the time. I bet everyone on this call has done the bad thing, even though they've known the good thing to do. So the twist here, though, is that we make the devils literal. So they actually exist. Late one night, each of the two main human characters in the story kind of is sitting in bed, wakes up, and there's a devil at the foot of their bed saying, yo, what's
nightmare scenario.
I'm Rafe. I'm the person who's been sitting on your shoulder since you were a baby, telling you to, like, fucking with your life, basically. Messing with your life. And the humans are understandably not excited about this happening to them in the middle of the night, as anybody would be. And then the devil's saying, no, it's cool. Like, what's going on here is that you guys are actually super good-hearted, and we have not been able to corrupt you in any way for the 20-odd years you've been alive. We're sick of it. You guys are probably sick of it, too. It's just ruining all of our lives. So instead, we're going to help you. We're going to be your pals. We're going to, like, you know, go all around town having little adventures. And through that, your lives are just going to get so much better. It's going to be great. Let's do it, right? The humans are like, no. The devils are like, actually, yes. This is happening whether you want it to happen or not. So it moves from there. I mean, that's really the hook and the premise of the first issue.
First
two people meeting their shoulder devils, and you know, their lives begin to change drastically from it. I call it Gremlins meets Good Omens.
Ooh, nice.
The devils are very gremlin-y in the way that Ryan draws them, which is awesome. And the things they do are very gremlin-y. But the Good Omens part of it comes from the idea that we're dealing with real questions of, you know, as people become more powerful and influential in their lives, why does it become so difficult to remain a good person? You think of the people who are the most powerful on the planet, they're not necessarily the best people in the world at all. If anything, it's the opposite. And so that's kind of what we're dealing with. Everybody knows what temptation is. Everybody knows what it feels like to have the devil whispering in their ear. And what if you actually could meet that devil and that devil wanted to, like, you know, be your friend? So the sort of second line of the story, the second part of the hook, is that the devils have their own reason for doing this, which is that they are low-level devils in hell. They're essentially like Amazon delivery truck drivers in hell. They're like gig workers, and they hate it. They feel like hell is unfair. It's a rigged system against them. And so they're trying to burn it all down to the ground by starting like a class revolution in hell, which is an elaborate plan that they have, which begins with revealing themselves to their two humans, which is a big no-no in hell and could get them in gigantic trouble. But whatever, they're devils. Fuck it. They're going to do what they want to do.
One of the things that I really liked about this setup, and for anybody who's not watching the live show, we're looking at some of the pages here, but the two main characters that we follow, the devil on the shoulder, they feel like a regular level of good. Like, there's a version of this story where they're two saints, you know, right. They're two just like the best people you've ever heard of in your entire life. But these are just two regular people who are trying to do good because that's sort of who they are in the regular daily life. What led to that decision? What led to deciding on these two main characters as the right people to follow?
That is a great question. Ryan, at some point, there's going to be a great one for you. We're going to talk about the devils.
And no, man, you're good. I'm just watching, man.
I'll do one for Ryan. Ryan, how you do art?
Ooh, wow. Did you just come up with that? That off the top of your head?
Peabody Award alert.
Yeah, it was amazing. Let me quickly answer the question, then we'll talk about how Ryan does art. Is that something, Ryan? Great. So we chose these people because they're people, basically. You know, like, I think we tell stories about completely ordinary individuals who live ordinary lives, who live very relatable lives, that get dropped into really extraordinary situations. And that is compelling to us, to tell stories about regular people with regular foibles who kind of have regular goals in their lives that they may or may not be achieving. And, you know, you look at, I mean, people at home who are just listening maybe don't know this, but like, the air conditioner, what we're seeing is a shot of a dude in his bedroom with the devil at the end of his bed. And there's like a window box air conditioner, which is a, you know, a great air conditioner. It gets the job done. It cools down the room. But it's not like, you know, this person is Batman with like central air or anything like that.
Yeah, that's not a rich person's air conditioner.
No, it's not. Like, these are ordinary folks trying to live lives. Like the first dude, Cam Stain and Star Wilson are the two main human characters. And Cam is an adjunct professor of philosophy at a very shitty community college, designed around a terrible architect. And Star is basically an entry-level nurse connected to Master and Turney Memorial Hospital in Chicago. So she's like doing her thing, but they're not world beaters, which is again very intentional. We want people to be able to see themselves in these characters and see the struggles they go through and be like, well, what would I do if my devil showed up at the end of the bed one night?
I do have a question for the art, Alex, if I may try to beat your question.
We'll see.
The first issue was such a great surprise, or there was such a great surprise in the middle where we pivot from the humans. And I was like, oh, and then the devils show up and then the humans have to deal with the devils. But no, the devils actually are in some ways the main characters, or at least on equal par. And mm-hmm. I feel like the first big clue of that is how detailed they are in the art. So, Ryan, if you could talk about that, like, we see the two panels, we just saw the two panels on the screen. Like, it felt like now we're meeting our main characters.
Yeah. I mean, they drive the story. Right. Our people are just going about their lives like they normally do. And the story is a story because of these devils. And so the story is told half in hell and half in Chicago, where I live.
And not at all a hell. No one would call that hell.
No, not at all.
Right. Yeah, watch yourself there.
But it for me, like, is so fun to design two distinct worlds. And we did it with 8 Billion Genies, where I did a distinct art style for inside the bar and then a distinct art style for outside of the bar, where the fantastical could you know, live and thrive. And so with this, I'm trying to do the same thing with a similar conceit that, just like in 8 Billion Genies, the devils are their own light source. And so whenever they're there, you know they're there because their light is affecting the entire environment. So in a sense, you've got like three different worlds. You've got normal Chicago, nice and mellow. You've got hell, craziness. And then you've got Chicago when the devils are present. And that's its own kind of like color scheme and visual environment. So it's really like, I'm doing the colors as well. And so I have to think about it in terms of the color, because I know when the devils are around that things are going to be more technicolor and more, you know, there's going to be multiple light sources. And, you know, when rake is there, it's a pink. And when collar is there, it's like an orangey yellow. thing. But you know, that's where a lot of like the playing and invention is. But with drawing the humans, that's where more of the like subtle acting, like the actual harder drawing, is for the humans to like actually convey emotion. And you know, because everything is more subdued and more subtle versus Hell is, you know, you've got these crazy bug like devil dudes that are you know, crawling all over everything, and that's like big loud cartooning, and that's like easy to do. It's the Chicago parts that are hard.
Wanted to compliment you. I'm so happy you guys are working on another project together. I love when you guys are together. Such a great team. But I also wanted to compliment the art. I'm very happy because sometimes I get too freaked out by the comics. So I really love the balance of not just like, because, you know, obviously it's the, you know, the end of your bed, it's pitch black. So if you would have just like shown the eyes of the devil or something like that, to have another kind of light source to soften them up so they're not so scary is such a smart choice, because it's like, oh, maybe these devils aren't so bad. You know what I mean? Like maybe we will work with them because they're kind of, you know, they're not the scariest looking. They also kind of are cute a little bit. So I was wondering if you guys had kind of talked about like how evil to make them, or how, you know, you'd mentioned gremlins, which is nice because they're also a little adorable and sadistic, but you know, there's a nice balance there.
They need a level of charisma and familiarity and openness that, you know, was the same thing with 8 Billion Genies, where, you know, with 8 Billion Genies, it was a cute little dude who looked kind of like you and was your best friend. And the idea was that they looked that way because they wanted you to trust them with your deepest, you know, innermost want, your desire, your big wish, right? And so they were going to be your bud and your pal, because all they really wanted was for you to wish. They wanted you to wish. And so with this, they're creepy, and they have the ability to get really scary if they need to. But again, like, they want to work with these humans. They want to stop, you know, poking their tail up their nose, you know, to piss them off during the day and whispering like evil into their ear, right? They want to help you, I promise. And so you know, so they, it's a good space for me to cartoon a bunch. Like, I love horror movies, and I still really like, I think about doing like a straight horror story at some point, but the horror comedy, the balance between funny and scary is always so fun, like, of a space to play in. I don't know, Charles, you can talk more about it. I've talked enough.
Well, what I will say about the devil design is that Ryan, I didn't know this at first, and then one day, like, he just randomly sent me a picture of Willem Dafoe, and which is not, I mean, he'll do that a lot. He'll randomly send me pictures of Willem. He's been doing it for years. But
Dafoe is your love language?
Yeah.
Yikes. Watch out.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It's a challenge. However, in this particular case, he sent it to me, and then he's like, that's what I based Rake on. And
oh,
like,
wow, I can see that now.
Of like, yeah, you know, that's the female triangle face devil. I was like, holy hell, wow, that you really did. Holy, it really does.
Yeah, Rake is snarling Willem Dafoe, and Collar is Popeye.
I can see that.
And so those are like the bases that start them on. Like, yeah, the, you know, kind of thing, and then the, you know.
But I went to go see that picture, Nosferatu. Anybody check that one out yet?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Great film.
Great.
But I'm watching the movie, and for about half of it, I'm like, it's like I'm reading my own comic book.
Well, hilarious. We talked a lot about 8 Million Genies. I was happy that a Wizard got a cameo in this, the action figure. That was one of my favorite projects you guys did.
Yeah, thank you, Wizard, man. It's beloved. I am sure this is nothing you guys don't already know, but I actually did a release earlier this year, and or I guess late last year, a whole full-length rock opera concept album based on curse words.
Yes.
With a bunch of kick-ass tunes set in Wizard's universe. So we are in the early but rapidly becoming elaborate stages of planning a big like silent e-party at C2E2 in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Where we will be celebrating the Lucky Devils, 8 Billion Genies, and if I can get my shit together, having a live performance of the entire record, like bringing my band. Oh,
that's awesome.
Which I hope I can do it and don't. Like, there's so much to do to make that work, like to get the gear there.
Well, plus it's like it's not necessarily part of your job.
No, don't have to do this.
Yeah.
No, Ryan, are you sure? I don't have to do it. I kind of feel like I do.
You've put a marker down.
It would be really cool if you did.
You put a marker down.
Well, yeah, if we
it'd be real cool if I did.
It sounds like there's a devil on your shoulder telling you to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we could take one job away from you, because you may know this from previous appearances, but every week on the show we have Brett Macris, professional chef down in New Orleans, either curates or creates a drink for us. And the drink that he created this week is the Lucky Devil, which is bourbon or rye, Aperol, lemon juice, simple syrup, egg white, lemon peel, cinnamon stick, and fire, actual fire.
So
you actually set it on fire too. It sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have not made it, but it looks very good.
I am going to.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Send that to me after this. I will make it and do some video or something.
Oh, cool.
Hell yeah.
I'll make some content.
And I have, while we're doing that, I already have your merch figured out. I have the Lucky Devil t-shirt.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great shirt.
Randomly, I'm already handling your merch is what I'm saying. So.
Wow, okay. So we've got an official, cocktail creator. We've got a merch dude.
And I have one t-shirt that I will sell. I will sell it. I will sell it.
Show up with the party.
For the right number.
Who wants it?
I mean, that's called scarcity. All
right. Yeah, that's right.
$1,000.
It's that Wu-Tang album. But
exactly.
Not to get back to the book, but I did want to follow up on what Pete mentioned about the wizard thing. Without spoiling it, there's further Easter eggs for some of your work that happens throughout the issues. When is the right time to pepper something like that in? I mean, I feel like this is a perennial question.
Ryan's concerned, every panel is
whenever Charles makes the mistake of leaving some open space.
Wow.
So is that all you then, Ryan, sort of like sneaking that stuff in, or when do you pull back?
What is I make a lot of stuff up in the inking, and a lot of it is like space filling. And it drives our letterer mad, because he's like, well, I need the balloon to be here. I can't cover up your weird poster. And it's like, well, I don't know. I wasn't just going to leave the space empty.
Yeah.
Like, I have to negotiation. Fill it. The art has to feel full and complete. And so a lot of jokes get lost under the word balloons, and unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know. Like, that's I do that stuff frequently when I'm inking, because I can turn my brain off a little bit. Like, it's a little bit, the deep thought goes in the thumbnailing, and then the medium thought goes into the penciling, and then the inking is usually I turn my brain off and, you know, watch a movie or something while I do it. So that's when I'll like take the perspective grid that I have there and figure out that, oh, it's a, you know, a poster or a picture, or, you know, like what goes on this person. I didn't figure out anything for their shirt, and like I'll frequently screw up because I won't have penciled anything, and I will try and like fit in the words. Like I just did a drawing which is actually covered up by letters in issue 2, so you can't see it, but the guy has a mug that says "I heart vehicular manslaughter." Wrote that in there because I was just trying to come up with something weird and specific, and then it got covered by balloons. But like, I didn't. Vehicular manslaughter is a really hard, long word.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's an effort. Yeah.
Oh my god!
Watching the world like a single human hair, trying to letter it in.
Yeah, I really. You can read it. But
that's another merch opportunity. Just saying. Just saying.
We have a pretty robust web store thing going. Like, we really like putting weird stuff up for sale on our web store. And we just launched a bunch of t-shirts, which is fun. But we want to do more of, you know, like it. I don't really know as much about this as Ryan does, but like, there's a very easy to use kind of print on demand system that kind of lets you put up whatever design you want of literally anything. And so we're gonna start doing really weird. Like, what are some of the weird things you've ordered, Ryan? Like, you order a lot of weird stuff.
an iHeart Vehicular Manslaughter mug.
Yeah, I mean, you could do yeah. that.
As not seen simple. In the Lucky Devils 2.
I was going to say, that's a hard thing to sell because it's not actually in the book. You're selling something that doesn't
exist.
Like we
were talking about earlier, it increases the rarity.
It's true. Yeah. That's true.
$10,000.
Price going up.
There's but I don't know. I'm sure we'll do stuff. I think I want to definitely want to get some fun curse words t-shirts up there. I think, you know, t-shirts based on the, because you don't have to, like, it doesn't cost anything to put a design up. So you just put up an image of Wizard look, doing something badass. And then if you sell 10, you sell 10. It's cool. So yeah. I'm sure we'll do all that stuff.
I will say, you know, talking about things that are just like maybe lost or maybe or behind balloons, like it, even if we don't see it, it just speaks to the general tone of sort of all of your work together, which has like fun, like playful all the time, but underneath like big ideas and just like very well thought out mythological or philosophical underpinnings, I feel like. So I think it's valuable even if we never get to see it.
That's right.
I mean, that's a great metaphor, Justin, actually, for what we do. Because I think there's a lot of stuff in what we do that you feel more than you directly see. And a lot of it is because we spend forever building these books. Like this, we've been working on this book for over a year. And so, you know, it'll come out tomorrow. Issue one is out on January 8th tomorrow. And then there'll be 8 more issues following. But we've been planning for this, building this launch, doing all these things to make sure people knew about it. For the longest time, and a lot of that work has been building out this really, really sort of robust story architecture underneath the like awesome, fun vehicular manslaughter mug gag. Right? there's 10,000 choices behind everything that leads to that mug being on that dude's desk, and so it's, and I think people can feel it. You know, like you can feel if a comic's been kind of thrown together in 6 weeks. Versus a comic that has two creators really, really working incredibly hard to make it feel the way it feels and having explanations for everything. And there's a reason this happens, And I think that's one of the reasons people like our stuff, honestly.
You had mentioned earlier that one of the big things is putting the reader in the what would you do position, which I definitely felt that when I was reading the book, immediately going into, okay, if there was a devil at the end of my bed, what would I do in that situation? And then as you get further into the book, same sort of thing. But I'm curious to hear from you guys, how much did this spur on philosophical discussions on your end in this situation?
And this, has this ever happened to you guys before? Is that why you put it in the comic?
As a fun.
Yeah. Funny story. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's such a fun, when you're feeling like a comic is almost a choose your own adventure, when you can play along and you can judge people based on like, that was a poor decision, I wouldn't have done that, I would have done this, and that was the big thing about Ape Valley Genies, was it was like, what would I wish for? And you can read through and you see what other people wish for and be like, oh, that was really clever, or I never would have thought of that, or that was really stupid, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So with this, I, you know, we're still building it, you know, like we're still deep in the creation of it. And so I'm really curious to see where it will go for us, as we see it resonate with people, because, you know, the book's not done. We're going to know if people like the book before we're done, you know, making the 9 issues. So it will be interesting to see how we respond to people's response, because I think that happened a lot with 8 Billion Genies and realizing that it was like a thing that people were really like, it was making people ask questions while they're reading it, like questions of themselves. And I think that's one of the big things that ties 8 Billion Genies to Lucky Devils, is that we're here again with asking people to ask themselves what they would do in this situation, which, you know, talking about want and desire was an awesome way to tell human stories, and talking about greed and evil and temptation is once again like a really revealing way to tell stories about people. So I don't know. Did that answer the question?
Certainly answered it for me, Ryan. Great job.
Great. Yeah. Great.
let me ask you guys a question, because almost nobody has read issue two at this point. You guys, I know, have you guys had a chance to read it before we sent it over earlier today? I realized it was late in the game, but
yes.
Did it go where you thought it was going to go? Was it surprising? Did it open the world up for you in ways you weren't thinking it would? Like, what? How did that one land? Because I'm actually looking for feedback at this point.
Look, ready to react. First off, I love the pivot to I hate vehicular manslaughter. Like, a surprising change from the first issue.
Not me.
But I will say I did not expect that we were going to go here at all. And, you know, that was maybe the second issue was coloring what I was saying earlier about the devil characters. Like, I guess I don't want to say anything else about what we see, but like definitely a surprise and a pleasant one. And it deepens the world in a way that now I don't know what the next direction is going forward either.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, that's the place I like to be in a comic book. And you almost, to spoil one thing that's like on the, not even the opening page, but the title page of the first issue, you have the different rings of hell or the different sins going on there. So it was like, oh, okay, we got a structure going on here. We're going to amp it up one each time. And that's kind of what happens, but also kind of not exactly what happens. And what I thought was a very interesting way, and Justin and I are both jumping around because we don't want to say what you don't want us to say, but I was very pleasantly surprised by it. I think particularly knowing that there's not a direct but an antecedent here in 8 billion genies. Mm-hmm. I was expecting more of like, and then we get a time jump to a year later and we see what's happened to these people, and then we see another one and it spirals out of control. But at least in terms of the first two issues, I was very impressed by how it was more of this progressive story that is spiraling out of control, but in a very, very different way.
How are you going to squeeze it all in is my question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's always the question. Nine to tell the story. I know what we're doing. It's, you know, the story takes place over 9 years. So it is, you know, there's going to have to be time expansion. And we're going to look at these people's lives and, you know, the way the devils change their humans' lives and the way that affects things on Earth and the way that affects things on hell. I mean, it's not a spoiler if you've read literally anything else we've done, that things will get very big and very crazy in the story. Yeah. Because big things come from small things. And when you have two devils who are trying to start a revolution in hell, like low level devils versus the guys at the top, because hell's a hierarchy and they're going to try and burn it all down by making two humans into the most influential, like ordinary nobody people into the most influential people on Earth, whether they want it or not. But a big key component of that is the people have to stay good. Like, it doesn't work if they get corrupted. So they have to keep them good. So it's devils doing things very antithetical to the way devils normally operate, because they believe that they're going to be the saviors of hell, which it's all of the things that you think would normally be told with a story like this being flipped on their heads in really interesting ways. And I know what happens. Ryan knows what happened too. We have an outline. We have it all on papers, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen that way. Like, we're just going to do our best and see if the story's going to surprise us. It's going to take us to new places. And I think we both have a lot of faith and confidence in our ability to make the right story choices at the right time. And usually that's just what's the most holy shit kind of incredible thing that surprises us. Like, one of my favorite things is when Ryan reads a script and he's like, he'll like text me and be like, why did you do that? Like, that's not,
what's wrong with you?
Why would you?
Yeah, I didn't think that was what we were doing here, but okay. Awesome. Cool. Like, it's, that's the best, because if I can do that for Ryan, it works for everybody.
To answer your question, my rom-com brain thought that the two devils were going to kind of puppet master the two people, and they would kind of like fall in love, and it would be like this kind of love story of these two strangers who get together. But that's just, you know, but I was pleasantly surprised with what actually happened.
It's great.
I do, since that wasn't a question, if you don't mind, I'll ask one here.
He asked us a question. I was just answering
a question. He was answering a question for a while.
You're right. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry, Pete.
Fucking guy.
Alex and Pete are each other's devils, just so you guys know. It's weird. Mm-hmm. Rom-com.
So you've got these devils in the book who are the people who are upending the system against the big guys, versus the humans are the people who are not. So I'm curious. I mean, that seems obviously very purposeful. What should the takeaway be, or should we wait and read the entire series? But what should the takeaway be about humanity in terms of people who are good, not necessarily fighting back against the system that pushes them down?
Oof. That's a great point. Because, oof, you know, man, like the book begins with one of the two human characters who's a professor at a shitty community college, named after one of the worst architects of all time.
Man, you're after this.
Going hard.
You're going so hard.
Hate him.
I didn't notice.
The question he asks is, why is it impossible to imagine like a truly good adult? Like you have to like jump through all of these hoops to put them in. Oh, maybe they're in a monastery and they never interact with other people, or like they like, but to, like an ordinary, like good person in society, like everybody does bad things. Everybody does, like, you know, just by kind of existing as part of the society that humanity has built for itself, you're kind of being evil. You're participating, sort of willingly participating in the destruction of the planet, among many other things you might be doing. And I think being complacent about not fixing things can be just as evil as actually doing them. And so why does that happen to us, right? Why do we become that person as opposed to people who are like, let's all just like make this place amazing? Why do we lean toward bad instead of good? It's weird to me. It's weird to Ryan. And so that's the question, you know, like why do people do bad things? Why do they let bad things happen? It's weird. It shouldn't be that way. What's happened to us, kind of? And that sounds kind of heavy, and we keep it fun. We keep it light in the book, but it's a real question. It's a real thing to think about.
Except the vehicular manslaughter bit, but yeah, I agree with you.
I did really quickly want to ask you about a couple of other projects you guys are working on. Ryan, you just finished up working on Barfly, right?
Yeah, great job, man. That was awesome.
Was great. What was it like playing in the Minor Threats universe?
I mean, it was awesome. I really liked Minor Threats. I was really jealous of Scott getting to draw all that weird stuff and you know, like, because it had a lot of God Hates Astronauts like vibes to me, but was more structured. So, like, I don't know. I was a fan of that book to begin with, and then like at San Diego 2 years ago, I met up with Scott and we were talking about it, and he was just like, yeah. Talking about like expanding the Minor Threats universe, maybe like you could do a cover or something. And then I did a cover for the Alternates, which was like the first spinoff. And Patton and Jordan really loved it. And so they brought me in to do Barfly. Kyle Stark did the bulk of the scripting on it. And then like it was plotted with Patton and Jordan. But they just let me do whatever the hell I want. And like you, if you look at that book, you can look at, I drew the first page and I was really nervous, like, because like Scott's art is so impressive. And obviously like working with a lot of funny people, I was like, all right, I'm going to do what they want me to do. And then as I started drawing it, you can see me start to make stuff up because they liked it. And they were okay with it. And so, like, there wasn't a single thing that I had to take out. And I just went nuts. Like, I emptied the coffers. Like, every joke that I had thought of, like, funny band names and stuff. Like, I talk about stuff that got covered up by lettering. Like, there's a lot. And it took me a lot longer than any comic I've ever drawn because I was putting in so many jokes. It was so fun, especially to like make Patton laugh. Was great. You know, like, and there's one poster at one point. I guess it's for a band. I don't know. It just says Entree the Giant, and Patton really liked that. It got covered up by the lettering. And Patton really liked it, and so he's like, "We got to see the Entree the Giant poster."
I mean, you can really see in the book the progression, like, is palpable. Like, I think that's a great, anybody who has read it or hasn't, like, go back and look through, because you can see the population grow of bits, the bit population.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of, is this okay? Like, is this okay? Is this okay? Can I do this? Like, I mean, there was, like, on page 3, there was, there's this panel, this really boring panel that was, like, establishing shot of the outside of this person's house. Like, that's all it said. And I'm like, all right, let's... let's see what they let me get away with. And so there are more jokes in that one panel. Like I drew a crash flying saucer, like UFO, in the middle of the street, and there's one dead alien and another one running from it, and he's holding like a bottle of liquor, like implying, you know, they drove into it.
Weirdly, a case of vehicular manslaughter.
Yeah, there's a big sign that says Tony Enchilada's off-track betting, with, like, a song of a guy saying we don't sell enchiladas. Like, little things like that. I put, and, there's like 6 jokes in that one panel, and I was like, let's just see what happens. And then I'm like, whoa, why is this book late? We're on a house.
Well, it was like, definitely worth it. It is a great, great book. Charles, you've been doing the Star Wars books all along at Marvel, and you got the Kylo Ren book coming up. Yep. But also, this is a while ago now, but I don't think we've talked since then. At your Comic-Con, you had 2 more Marvel books announced, pretty much back-to-back. Daredevil, Cold Day in Hell, which is kind of like an old man Daredevil tale, and Eddie Brock Carnage, which, as we saw at the end of the Venom War storyline, throws Eddie Brock in the Carnage suit. Why was now the right time to come back so big with these 2 titles in addition to everything else?
You know, I haven't written superheroes at Marvel for 5 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe more at this point. I think it'll be more than that. The reality is that I had finished up like Return of Wolverine, I think, after having done a long Daredevil run, tons of stuff with Inhumans, X-Men, all kinds of things. And I think I was just kind of over the superhero vibe for a long time, except for Daredevil, Cold Day in Hell, which I think this has been like said in the press and stuff like that. But Steve and I have been working on this book for, it will be almost 5 years by the time it comes out next April. It's just been a real meticulous, hyper-specific process. Ryan, you've seen the whole issue 1. Like it's very intense what Steve is doing on this book. It, you know, 12 panel grids, impossible to letter over, whatever. Wow. It's fine. It's going to be good.
It's fine.
And so in one sense, I wasn't really out of superhero stuff because that book was going on, but most of that was like, you know, most of that time was Steve doing the art. Like I wasn't actively working on it every single day with him. So that's a real like passion project for both of us that it's 3 issues. Each one is 30 pages. So it has the like Dark Knight kind of vibe. I think people are going to be really, really excited about it. I mean, the hook or the premise is that Daredevil's an old guy. His powers are radiation based. So they faded, right? They have a half-life. They faded away. So he's old. He's like running a soup kitchen in his old neighborhood. And he's sort of trying to be a good guy. Left everything behind him. The superhero game is pretty much done by now in all of New York City. New York City is very run down. It's just everything's kind of crappy. And then one day a dirty bomb goes off in Hell's Kitchen. Dirty bombs are radiation based. And so his powers reactivate for 72 hours. And so for that 72 hour period, he can be Daredevil again and chooses to be to figure out who set the bomb off. And so that's your hook. That's it. It's 72 hours of Daredevil coming back, you know, for this time period to see what he can do. And it ends up spiraling into a lot of his life. A lot of things that have happened to him since we like last saw him in the present day of Marvel. And Steve has done just gorgeous, beautiful, beautiful work. I think it's going to be one of those books that people are really like, you know, like that sometimes books take 5 years to make and this is what they look like when they do. And I think,
I can't wait, man. That sounds amazing.
Well, like a privilege, honestly, to be able to do something like that. And, you know, I'm really, really lucky with the artists I get to work with.
Before you move on to the other book, what is it about Daredevil for you that keeps in your brain?
The lawyer, probably the lawyer.
The stuff. Lawyer stuff?
We're going to talk about the lawyer thing. Yeah, maybe it's the lawyer thing. No, I don't know. I love that Daredevil is barely a superhero, right? Like he can like hear things really well. you know, cool. Like
it sounds annoying for a lot of his life.
Yeah, you know, like he, I don't know, he's definitely somebody who has a lot of challenges in his day-to-day life, and a lot of bad things happen to him, and he's got, you know, he's got a deeply religious background, which makes him interesting to me. He's got the legal background, which is like a not an afterthought as our professional backgrounds for so many superheroes. Like Daredevil being a lawyer is integral to many of his stories. So all of those things just make him into like a real person. And for me, I like real people. I mean, I do. And so writing a book that has a real person who gets in all kinds of crazy situations as his main character, as the main character, is fun. I really dig it. So that's that one. I don't know. Do you want to talk about Carnage? I mean, in some ways it's a weird book for me to come.
I was going to say that feels weird.
and part of it was that Jordan White is the editor on the Venom books right now.
Jordan D. White.
He's the best. And he's the guy who brought me into Marvel in the first place with Thunderbolts way, way, way back when in, 2013 when I took over from Daniel Way.
Hell of a Uke player too.
Yeah. And so he is a good Uke player. That's
he
true.
Is. He's done amazing player. Songs. I love him.
He does. He's good. And so he called me up one day. I was like, hey man, are you like up for doing something? And I was like, I don't know. What do you got? And he's like, well, it's Carnage. And I'm like, That does not feel like me. It does not feel like the book that I would or maybe even should be doing right now. And he's like, yeah, but like, here's what we're doing. Here's the idea. It's Eddie Brock gets the Carnage symbiote. It's never been done before. And it's completely wide open. And I called you for it because you're the guy who like will take a basic premise and do something really interesting with it. Wow. And so I started thinking about it. First of all, the way to get a writer to do a job is to like
butter him up.
Yeah, flatter.
Oh, Jordan D. White knows what he's doing.
You can do this, buddy. Nobody else. but I started thinking about it, and I decided that the idea of Eddie Brock, who's like a guy who's been trying to be like a good guy, his whole arc has been starts off as an asshole, and over 30 years or whatever, he's slowly but surely kind of become an okay dude, kinda. whereas Carnage is a total unredeemable, monstrous, devil, serial killing prick. Like there's nothing, Carnage is pure evil top to bottom. And so the idea of those two characters inhabiting the same body, sharing thoughts, not being able to get away from each other, bound to each other and hating each other and wanting the other one dead was really interesting to me to write, to figure out how the hell to do that and make it compelling dramatically. And because they kind of each know what each other one is going to do all the time. So they can't really trick each other. And so it's very, it's challenging, but it also sets up a dynamic that I think reinvents the whole symbiote thing in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. Like I'm not going to say the symbiote books have been the same thing for a long time, but it's a dynamic that we understand at this point. And this one felt like it was something new where I could do something that was kind of fresh and interesting. And it's not, you know, I don't know. Like, I like taking projects that interest me. And this one interested me. So if you don't like it, whatever. You don't have to buy it.
Wow. In your face. I mean, that's really interesting. Like, if there's anyone who can rehabilitate Carnage, it's someone who has themselves been rehabilitated over the course of their life, maybe.
Well, I don't know there's going to be much rehabilitation. It goes the other way, you know?
That's the other way it can go.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because you could say that, and this is the kind of thing people, fans of these books can be extremely intense in a way that is wonderful. Of course, like you want people to care about the books that you're doing, but you know, if I put forth the contention that Eddie Brock decided he should be rehabilitated, which is not the same thing as being rehabilitated and being a good guy. Like he's like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to do it. But if I could just be who I actually am, maybe I wouldn't be like this is a component of the book. You know,
oh, that's because cool.
Sometimes we're freed to be who we actually would want to be if nobody was watching. And that's a component of this book. Like who is Eddie Brock? And when he's got Carnage, he's maybe not the same
devil on his shoulder,
open the door. Devil all over your body, goopy devil.
Yeah. So just to review, lots of weird, gross stuff. Jesus Saiz is drawing it, and he was like, man, just give me horrific shit. I want the most horrific things you can think of. All right. He got it. It is, you guys know editor Nick Lowe, who runs the Spider Group.
Oh, yeah.
So he is the group editor who runs the, it's Jordan's office, but Nick is in the mix and reads all the stuff. He's like, in issue one, he's like, there's a whole splash page of something, frankly, horrific, deeply horrific happens. And Nick was like, I think we should censor that. I think we should make some of the blood black or do whatever. Censor is the wrong word. I think we should tone it down. Like, this seems a little right. advanced for what we're selling at Marvel Comics. And it ended up going the other way. I shouldn't have named Nick. That was probably not very nice. Nick had
no, but that's not a bad thing. Nick was doing his job.
Yeah. He was
great note, and Nick is
he
the
was
best.
Surprised by the Nick. Amount of blood and guts, and maybe he had
worked
some
with
thoughts.
Nick for many years. Love him, but it was like Jesus is really going for it on in that the gore element, right? Like it's a definitely very intense in a way that I think people are also going to be like, wow, this is not what we thought we'd get here, but it's cool to be able to do it. It's kind of like when Ryan got to put all those weird jokes in his book. Now I get to do
weird blood,
horrible body horror things.
Oh man, I'm scared to read it.
Covered by word balloons.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
So just to review real quick, you're doing Daredevil. You're doing Carnage, which the concept is Carnage is kind of like the devil on Eddie Brock's shoulder. No. And you're doing a book called The Lucky Devils. Is there anything you want to talk about?
Yeah,
yeah, what's up with you?
I need to get my ass to church. Situation.
You need a hug, you're getting me into, man.
I mean, Kylo Ren's not exactly a light and fluffy character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is obviously a lot of stuff, and Lucky Devils is great. Before we let you guys go, anything else you want to plug? Anything else out there that people should be checking out from either of you?
Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, it's just Lucky Devils. It's all, I mean, the Barfly trade comes out bizarrely not until like April. The series has been done for a while. In terms of the densest joke depository that I've ever done, it's definitely Barfly. So if you like goofs and gags and weird play on words and stuff, get that.
If only like, Lee Harvey Oswald had gone to the joke depository instead of the book depository.
No, I don't want that. I like it being a positive place.
No, he would have had some fun. He would
have. Yeah, I know. It's true.
Well, would have cut loose.
Anyways, I don't know. it's just really the Lucky Devils. I mean, we're doing a 9-issue series, whether you buy it or not.
We're going to buy it.
Yeah.
I'm buying it, man.
We're excited about it.
It's really cool. It's really fun.
It's very cool.
You know, it's dense too. Like we are crafting this thing with full attention and energy, like as hard as we can. So,
cool.
You know, there's no phoning in on this. I can't phone in. I wish I could, because I could make more things, but
glad you can't either.
Full-assed. It's not half-assed. It's full-assed.
Full-assed. You wouldn't expect it's full-assed from a Brown Soul project. What else can you ask?
I mean, that's what people want. That's the
that's the pull quote right there.
Please, full-assed. So for me, I mean, I've got a lot of cool comics coming out in the first half of 2025. The Shrouded College universe comes back with Cold Witch.
Oh, yes.
The third installment, which starts in May, we've decided. So that's Will Slaney back. That is sort of a John Wick with zombies in Cold War Siberia, which is super badass. We have Undiscovered Country coming back for its final arc starting in June, which is going to be really exciting.
Can't wait.
I have the final novel in the High Republic, Star Wars: The High Republic, Trials of the Jedi, which also lands in June. So this is the most, like, we're talking about a joke depository. This is more like a book deposit.
devil.
Yeah. But the other thing, the only thing I care about if people get, honest to God, I don't care. Don't buy any of the books. Don't even buy the Lucky Devils, although you probably should. For Ryan, buy it. Okay. The only thing I want people to get for me is the Curse Words concept album, my full-length rock opera record.
Yes!
It's incredible. It's the best. You can get vinyl copies. You can get digital copies at the web store, charlesoul.com/store. And it's just the best album of all time. Everybody says,
wow. Come see it live at C2E2.
Yeah, C2E2, baby. It's going to be live. It's going to be sick.
It's going to be something. I might be sick. I hope I'm not sick. Yes. If I'm not sick, I'll do it.
I can't fill in for you at all.
I got to be healthy. I got to stay healthy. Got to live to April. I'm going to do it.
Good.
You're both going to do it. I have full confidence. Congrats on the book. It is
yes. So awesome.
So fun.
Where it goes going forward.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Great to see you guys.
Bye-bye.
All right. There we go.
All those crazy kids.
Those so crazy fun. Kids. They did it again. Charles Soule and Ryan those Brown, two, The Lucky man. Devils, comes out tomorrow from Image Comics. Definitely pick it up. It is great. What?
Nothing. Just some questions coming in are already very, very on brand for us. It's great. Shouts.
Well, it is time for your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop the questions over in Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, maybe Instagram as well. What are you guys drinking tonight? Pete, garage beer, I assume.
That's correct. Yes. Good guess.
Great. Called it.
Nailed I kicked it off with Boulevardier. I got sort of halfway to the Stray Bullet cocktail. Ooh. And then one of my favorite beers, Fresh Cut from Peak Organic. Great
fresh
stuff.
Cut. You got to get that fresh cut, baby.
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
So question here from All in the Game. Y'all cut up on Squid Game Season 2 has done an insane 126.2 million views in its first 11 days on Netflix, with Season 1 doing an additional 21.7 million views. Congratulations to Netflix. I really think they're going to do it. I think they're going to do it. You know, like the whole thing. They're going to be.
Yes. I'm really pulling for those guys. I have watched all of Squid Game Season 2. Anybody else?
I also have watched all of Squid Game Season 2.
Pete, I have not watched one single episode of
Squid it's Game. Not for you, Pete. You no, can handle it.
Too much yucky stuff.
Too much humanity.
You don't like guns, right, Pete?
Yeah, definitely.
Unless the guns fall in love at the end.
Yeah, there we go. I love your bullets.
Have you watched? There's a new movie on Netflix called Kissin' Barrels, and it's just these two animated guns falling in love.
Ah, sounds amazing.
It's too erotic for me. I just can't.
Oh, really?
Can't
Olivia
it,
Munn yeah. does the voice of one of the guns, and I don't remember who does the voice.
Oh, the Munn gun. Love the Munn gun. Let me say, I was a little dubious.
Cullen
this Bunn.
Cullen Dunn.
Yeah, Bunn and Munn do the double gun. I was a little dubious of Squid Game Season 2. But I gotta say, I it was good. I enjoyed it. Wow. It got better, just like the first season. Out of the first episode into the rest, I thought it worked.
I thought it was a little bit of a step down. I watched the first season again beforehand, which I had been like okay with the first season. I watched the first season and I was like, this is good. This feels like Hunger Games. It feels like Battle Royale. I get it. I appreciated it a lot more the second time through, sort of divorced from the whole discourse about it at the time and the culture built around it. It's very tense and very well done. I think it got like diluted a little bit in the second season, particularly because you could feel the creator getting annoyed at people not getting it. And being like, yay, Squid Games. I like games. Woo, show me some of these games. And a lot of the thematic stuff that he's doing that I thought was really interesting was pointing out why the culture that rose around Squid Game Season 1 was bad.
Well, but I think I thought that was very smart to incorporate that.
Yeah,
and there's a component to the game that's added in the second season that I won't spoil. But like, I thought that really added a lot because... Mm-hmm. If our ride along character, our in character is the main character, like you can see his frustration in the same way that the discourse is.
Well, I feel like it's not enough squid and too much games. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's very little squid. I will.
Yeah,
say.
I'm pretty disappointed about that.
Yes. I will say I pitched an article on going down to the New York Aquarium to interview a squid expert to see if I could find out what games in Squid Game a squid would be best at. For some reason, they didn't pick up that.
Just
article.
Breaking out of places. Squids are notorious at getting out of small places, man.
Wow. Alex, I love it. I like you're really thinking outside the box.
Yeah. Got to do something, man. All right, Stray Bullet says, how much caviar is too much caviar? Is there even a bottom?
Oh, hell yeah. That's the kind of talk I like to hear from someone we're about to visit.
Really? Yeah, no thanks on the caviar.
I love caviar. I've been getting into caviar lately.
Man, you're just burning money?
Yeah, how do you
just got money
that?
To
because
burn?
That's expensive.
Do you go down to
let me say, it's not as at New Year's, there was a caviar price to move. And when you think about it, isn't like, aren't like regular eggs just giant caviar?
That is very true. Yeah, that's why I usually put a bunch of eggs on a cracker, and that's how I eat them.
Just eat the whole, eat an egg whole, right into them.
Yeah. Kyle Jones says, seeing everyone's best of 2024 list made me wonder, how many comics do you think you guys read last year just from the stack alone? That is a great question.
Let's see, 30 comics a week times, you know, whatever, 52.
I mean, we're... Good. Wow, what a happy bit of math.
I like that you knew the amount of comics but couldn't figure out how many weeks there are in a year.
Well, honestly, that's accurate for our guy, Mr. Peter Page.
I count every week and I get upset when it's over 30.
I mean, we're heading toward like almost 2,000, right?
Yeah, there's a lot. And then, I mean, I assume, do you guys read anything beyond that? Beyond what we do for the
sometimes,
stack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Not a ton because it's so much, but yes. I like it.
So there you go. Probably a couple of thousand a year. We got one last one here I'm going to throw out from Stanley. How's the weather by you?
Oh, man.
Very cold. It felt like 5 degrees today, which sucked to bring the kids to school.
Yes, was very cold.
I love the rage. Yeah, we got a ton of snow. I had to do a lot of shoveling yesterday.
How much snow do you have, Pete? Because as we know, Pete lives in rural Pennsylvania, always has and always will. He's
nope.
Never even been to New York City as far as I remember.
Oh, my God. That's really upsetting.
He's a country boy. Hey, he doesn't understand our big city ways.
Pete, tried Domino's now has a New York style pizza, so you can get like close to trying.
You should try
it. Like
yeah. It's as close as you're going to get, you know?
There's a reason people hate New Yorkers, you know what I mean?
Wow, there it is. Yeah, you exactly. And you hate us because you're not us. Did you see the question from earlier from Stanley, Alex? Are you guys sharing a hotel room or staying with Stray Bullet?
Ooh, halfsy-halfsy, I guess, is the answer there.
Yes, because we talked about it a little bit at the top, but we have a show in New Orleans. The three of us will be in New Orleans for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, mm-hmm. back together, hitting a town that all the locals call the Big Easy.
Yeah. I'm excited, man.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet. If you are down there, please do come down to Brew Carré on Friday. And speaking of which...
Has it been years since we've seen each other in life?
No, we saw each other last year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's been a whole year, right?
Yeah, but not years. Okay. This is an interesting fact. There's 52 of those weeks you were wondering about in every year.
Yeah,
those weeks you were wondering about.
Yes. Well, here's another thing that we were wondering about is our next section, but wonder no longer because it's trivia. And for that, woo-hoo! I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Well, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop.
And we already have a contestant who is going to be playing along today, and it is none other than our New Orleans correspondent, Brett Macris.
Hey, Stray Bully!
Right there on cam.
Hey, it's Brooklyn.
It's Brooklyn. He's back.
Hey, where Brooklyn at?
And just Pete, so you know, Brooklyn is a borough of New York, which is a place that
I used to live there, bro. It's also... The coolest kid ever.
Just to tee you up for this, obviously we're excited to see you down in New Orleans. It's nice to get this extra little preview ahead here. But the reason you're doing trivia today is actually for a pretty serious topic and a very good reason.
Yes.
Do you want to talk more about that?
A little bit of backstory into a current situation. We run shifts, which you guys were very, very generous and helped sponsor us when we were trying to get going. We are now going, and we're going very well. And
on the corner is our friend's downtown tattoo, and one of their employees, who's a good friend of Shift and a good friend of us, her brother was there on Christmas Eve during the attack on Bourbon Street.
Yeah,
man. New Year's Horrible Eve, story. Yes. And he was hit by the car. He is broken in many ways. Femur, leg, pelvis, clavicle, multiple broken ribs. And his family is trying to raise money to cover the hospital bills and the massive amount of money it's going to take to help him get through this. And yeah. It's going to take a lot. I mean, it's I can't imagine not just the physical, but the mental stress of going through this, you know, being in a place that you're, that's supposed to be safe and wonderful. And then suddenly it's a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. So that's where I'd like the trivia money to go today is
hell
to,
yeah.
Yep.
Of course. And, to,
yeah, his name Alex- is Emil.
Alex dropped the link to Emil's GoFundMe as well into the chat. Yes. So if anyone wants a way to help support him or someone who this like national tragedy, I think that's a great thing to do with your
And just for money. Anybody listening to the podcast who doesn't have the link, GoFundMe.com/F/RoadToRWRecovery. So recovery, but with a W in place of the first E. You can go right there and check it out. And I guess we'll have to see if you win. We'll see if we donate. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. There's no guarantee.
I might take some liberty with some of the answers, too.
Oh, so, man.
We'll see.
All right, but here we go. Take it away, Pete.
All right, today's trivia is about the badass comic book run The Blood Hunt, and a small nod to the legend, Angus McKenna's R.I.P. Gold Leader.
I have no idea who that is.
Gold Leader from
Star
Wars. Wait, from Star Wars?
That's right. Please all listen to all three options before making your selection. Question number one, spoilers ahead for The Blood Hunt. In The Blood Hunt, what do the vampires want? Is it A, affordable blood prices, B, eternal night, or C, Dig Wayne?
I'm going to say it's probably both. A and B.
Wow!
That's right.
For B, where a comic book club is going to be in New Orleans on Friday night.
Yeah!
Nice. You are correct. It is B and maybe also A. I don't know if they pay for blood or if they just suck it.
They probably suck it.
Yeah. The blood market. They probably suck it. They probably just suck it.
They probably just suck. Question number two. What happened to Blade? Is it A, possessed by infernal spirit of Varney? B, hurry, Eddie, the stewardess is coming. My Bart Simpson suitcase. C, Ed Stobart.
What? Did you see the movie Carry On, Pete? Is that
no,
what you're referencing?
I'm too scared. I can't watch it before we go on a
play. The real answer is A.
That is correct.
I forgot what other answer
yes,
I made up.
That's the correct answer is to forget those other ones.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. Question number three. For the good guys to win the blood hunt, who had to become the Sorcerer Supreme? Is it A, Dr. Doom? B, hey, big guy, did you break up with your girlfriend? C, huge lever.
It is A.
A is correct.
Wow.
I'm so excited to see you guys on Friday.
Right
back
mean,
at you, buddy.
Shouts.
Can't
I mean,
to see both of you. Yeah, I've Brooklyn, been down to, get hype, Brooklyn, get hype.
I've been down to New Orleans a couple times to see you, Brett. Pete's been there. And Alex, you've never been to New Orleans.
Never.
Right?
Never in his life.
Holy shit, we're going to kill this dude.
I have a trivia question. After Alex has not been drinking for months, how fucked up is he going to get?
Yeah, how's he going to survive? He should start training.
Let me say
if he wants to.
Yeah, no pressure, Alex. Yeah, one of the times when
the table.
One of the biggest drinking nights I've had in the city was with Alex when we were doing Comic Book Club at Nerdist, and Alex, myself, and Mike Bosey. Was that his name?
Yeah.
We sat at the bar.
The hose.
He was our like producer. Man, that guy can drink. And I drank so much. And to
so
the
much.
Point where.
Well, that was, he kept looking over. He was like, should we do more shots? And every time I was like, Yeah, let's go. Sounds great. And that was the night that I got into a cab. I still feel awful about this. I've talked about this before, and I'd flash back to this all the time. As I pulled up, as the guy pulled up to my house, I threw up all over his cab. Oh. I felt so horrible. I ran out of there and didn't realize that I had left my phone in the cab.
Well, at least he had something to sell to pay for the cleaning.
Yeah, at least he had something to sell. And then the next day, I had to take care of my kid, who was at the point like a year and a half or something. And I was just lying there on the floor wanting to die, not able to call anybody. It was awful.
I remember us getting drunk that one time where we had on the show the wine where they had brought like a bunch of wine bottles and stuff.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
We got
awesome,
sauced on that fucking day, too.
Yeah, that was good stuff. And just to get it back to the serious stuff for a second, we have donated $50 to this GoFundMe. GoFundMe.com/F/RoadtoRW.
For Breeze brother, Emil. She's great. She is a huge fan of ours, and we are a huge fan of her and her. Yeah, it's just a travesty. I'm sorry, you were finishing the URL and I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. Just road to it's recovery, but RW instead of RE at the beginning. That's all. And that's it. Yeah. Brett, we will see you very soon.
Yeah, we will. A couple days, bro.
Come down. Come to Brew Caray. Come to Shift. I cook for you. No one else cooks for you. I cook for you.
I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
Eat my way through New Orleans.
We'll see you very soon. Thanks, Brett. Good night, Brooklyn.
See you, Brooklyn.
Good night, guys.
See you, Brooklyn.
That's great.
Oh, man, I'm so hyped.
Pete, is that what you said, by the way, when you left New York forever?
What?
See you, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
When you left.
It was a crazy day. I remember it was very much like... oh my God, I'm totally blanking on one of my favorite movies, Coming to America, where people steal the luggage and he sees them like walking around. Like I gave away clothes and stuff because I was moving. And it was kind of this crazy thing where kids like walk by and they were wearing my stuff and I was like leaving.
I think you got hit in the head on your way out of town or something. That sounds like a fever dream that you had.
Well, it was during the pandemic.
Makes total sense because for the past couple of years, I just keep seeing people and I'm like, Pete? And it's not. Yeah. It's somebody wearing your clothes.
Yeah, you're like,
there's a lot of people walking
who's
around.
Who's rocking that Let a Wookiee Win t-shirt? I've only seen that
one. That's a one of a kind.
That's right.
Yeah. I do a podcast with that dude.
Speaking of one of a kind, comics are not one of a kind. They're many of a kind, and lots of them are coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to?
So many great comics to look forward to. I can't wait to read them. I'm stoked to read Absolute Batman number 4, DC versus Vampire World War V number 6, Batman and Robin number 17, and Welcome to Maynard number 1. Justin, come on!
Number two, yes. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
I mean, there is a lot of stuff. Pete covered some of it, but I'm going to throw out NYX number 7, the Kelly and Lansing X-Men book, has been riding up in my esteem over the first six issues. So I'm excited.
A good description, riding up, that's, you know.
It's not like a pair of boxer shorts. No, that's not what I'm talking about. It's been getting good. I'm excited to see it continue to progress. I like the character that has been teased that will be featured in this issue. And I got to shout out Absolute Batman number 4. I mean, come on, this book continues to go up and up. Across the line, I think we've been in the number 3 issues of each of the Absolute books were absolute destroyers. Like, very much looking forward to reading number 4.
We talked about Barfly from Kyle Starks earlier with Ryan Brown. Big day for Kyle Starks with 2 serial killer books coming out. Those Not Afraid from Dark Horse Comics, which is serial killer versus serial killer. And then he's also got a new issue of Where Monsters Lie Cul-de-Sac, which is much more of a big, crazy, action-y
fun book,
slasher thing. Very, very fun. And there was one other one that I was going to give a shout out to. Oh, I was going to give a shout out to Snot Girl number 17.
Of course you were.
Brian, we're a Snot Girl podcast now.
Here's the thing: I think we were all pretty iffy about Snot Girl. I thought the return, Snot Girl 16, was great.
Yes. I think so before great. The return.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Everything up to there, I was like, I don't know, I like this team, but I'm not sure about this. Stockgirl 716, great. New issue comes out. Very nervous. Hope it's good, but I guess we'll see.
Time would tell.
That is it for this week's show.
Woo-hoo!
People we want to thank. We want to thank Jeff Parker for coming on to talk about Zootopia, yes. number one, that is out tomorrow from Dynamite. Charles Soule and Ryan Brown for talking about The Lucky Devils, number one, out tomorrow from Image Comics. Next Great week comic. On the show, another big one, Rick Remender and Paul Azaceta are going Woo-hoo! To be here to talk about their new book, The Seasons. So that should be a lot of fun. As Man. Mentioned, we're going to be down in New Orleans. So please do come and say hello. I'll have some stickers for you if you do.
Big week for Comic Book Club. We might be extra pale 1 week from tonight on the live on the live show.
So Rick Remender, talk for a while. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast you can check out every weekday. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast recapping Creature Commandos. That's wrapping up this week. We'll see if we get time to do that.
Among anything else? Nope.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Comic Book Club on Blue Sky. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book.
See you in New Orleans. Come on down.
Let's hang out. Come close. Come see.
Come on.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.